inaccessible, I explained. We communicate once a week, but...
Of course. Well, that would make anyone sad, love. Of course it would, she said, nodding sympathetically. Everyone needs their mum now and again, doesn't matter how old they are.
On the contrary, I said, if anything, weekly contact is too much for me. Mummy and I, we're... Well, it's complicated. Mrs. Gibbons nodded sympathetically, wanting me to continue. I, on the other hand, knew it was time to stop. An ice cream van went past in the street, the chimes playing Yankee Doodle, pitched a few painful hertz below the correct notes. I recalled the words, feathers and caps and macaroni, from some deep and completely useless vault of memories. Raymond clapped his hands together in fake bonhomie.
Right then, time's marching on.
Mum, go and sit down, your programme's about to start. Eleanor, could you maybe give me a hand and bring in the washing? I was glad to help, glad to be moving away from mummy-related conversation. There were various chores Mrs. Gibbons needed assistance with. Raymond had elected to change the cat's litter trays and empty the bins, so I'd certainly drawn the long straw with the laundry. Outside, the early evening sun was weak and pale. There was a row of gardens to the right and the left, stretching off in both directions. I placed the laundry basket on the ground and took the peg bag, on which, in looping cursive, someone had helpfully stitched pegs, and hung it on the line. The washing was dry and smelled of summer. I heard the syncopated thud of a football being kicked against a wall, and girls chanting as a skipping rope skimmed the ground. The distant chimes of the ice cream van were now almost inaudible. Someone's back door slammed, and a man's voice shouted a furious reprimand at, one hoped, a dog. There was birdsong, a descant over the sounds of a television drifting through an open window. Everything felt safe. Everything felt normal. How different Raymond's life had been from mine. A proper family. A mother and a father and a sister nestled amongst other proper families. How different it was still. Every Sunday, here, this. Back indoors, I helped Raymond swap the sheets on his mother's bed for the clean ones I'd brought in from the line. Her bedroom was very pink and smelled of talcum powder. It was clean and nondescript, not like a hotel room, more like a bed and breakfast, I imagined. Save for a fat paperback and a packet of extra strong mints on the bedside table, there was nothing personal in the room, no clue to the owner's personality. It struck me that, in the nicest possible way, she didn't really have a personality. She was a mother. A kind, loving woman about whom no one would ever say, "She was crazy, that Betty," or "You'll never guess what Betty's done now," or "After reviewing psychiatric reports, Betty was refused bail on grounds that she posed an extreme risk to the general public." She was, quite simply, a nice lady who'd raised a family and now lived quietly with her cats and grew vegetables. This was both nothing and everything. "Does your sister help out with your mother, Raymond?" I asked. He was grappling with a duvet and I took it from him. There is a knack to such things. Raymond is a man without the knack. He put on the pillowcases, flowers, ruffles, instead. "Nah," he said, concentrating. "She's got two kids and they're about a handful. Mark works offshore, so she's a single parent for weeks at a time, really. It's not easy. It'll be better when the kids are at school," she says. "Ah," I said.
Do you enjoy being an uncle, then?"
Uncle Raymond, a somewhat unlikely role model, I felt. He shrugged.
"Yeah, they're good fun. There's not much to it, to be honest. I just bung them some cash at Christmas and birthdays, take them to the park a couple of times a month. Job done."
I would never be an aunt, of course. Probably just as well.
"You had a lucky escape with Mum and the photo albums this time, Eleanor," Raymond said. She'll bore the pants off you next time about the grandkids, just you wait and see.
He was making a lot of assumptions there, I thought, but I let it pass. I looked at my watch, surprised to see it was after 8. I must be off, Raymond, I said.
If you want to hang on for another hour or so, I'll be done here and we can get the bus together, he said.
I declined, naturally. I went downstairs and thanked Mrs. Gibbons for tea. She, in turn, thanked me profusely for coming and for helping with the chores.
Eleanor, it's been lovely, so it has, she said. I haven't been beyond the garden for months now, these knees of mine, so it's a pleasure to see a new face, and such a friendly one at that. You've been a great help around the house too. Thanks, Hen, thanks very much.
I smiled at her. Twice in one day to be the recipient of thanks and warm regard. I would never have suspected that small deeds could elicit such genuine, generous responses. I felt a little glow inside, not a blaze, more like a small, steady candle.
Come back any time, Eleanor. I'm always in. You don't have to come, we... She jabbed a finger Raymondwards. Him? Just come yourself if you like. You know where I am now. Don't be a stranger.
On impulse, I leaned forward and brushed my cheek, not the scarred one, the normal one, close to hers. It wasn't a kiss or an embrace, but it was as close as I was able to come.
Cheerio, she said. Safe home now.
Raymond walked me to the end of the road to show me where the bus stop was located. I'd probably have a bit of a wait, it being Sunday, he said. I shrugged. I was used to waiting, and life has taught me to be a very patient person.
See you tomorrow then, Eleanor, he said.
I took up my travel pass and showed it to him. Unlimited travel, I said. He nodded, gave a small smile. Miraculously, the bus arrived. I raised my hand and climbed on board. I stared straight ahead as the bus pulled away to avoid any awkwardness with waving. It had been quite a day. I felt drained, but something had crystallized in my mind. These new people, new adventures, this contact. I found it overwhelming, but to my surprise, not at all unpleasant. I'd coped surprisingly well, I thought. I'd met new people, introduced myself to them, and we'd spent problem-free social time together. If there was one thing I could take from today's experiences, it was this. I was nearly ready to declare my intentions to the musician. The time for our momentous first encounter was drawing ever closer. Chapter 11. I didn't see Raymond on Monday or on Tuesday. I didn't think about him, although my mind did return to Sammy and to Mrs. Gibbons on occasion. I could, of course, visit either or both of them without Raymond being there. Indeed, both had stressed that to me on Sunday. But would it be better if he were by my side? I suspected that it would, not least because he could always fill a silence with banal, inane comments and questions should the need arise. In the meantime, I'd gone to the mobile telephone emporium with the least garish fascia in the closest location to the office, and on the highly suspect advice of a bored salesperson, had eventually purchased a reasonably priced handset and package which allowed me to make calls, access the internet, and also do various other things, most of which were of no interest to me. He'd mentioned apps and games. I asked about crosswords, but was very disappointed with his response. I was familiarising myself with the manual for the new device, rather than completing the VAT details on Mr. Leonard's invoice, when very much against my will, I became aware of the conversation going on around me, due to its excessive volume. It was, of all things, on the topic of our annual Christmas lunch.
Yeah, but they have entertainment laid on there, and lots of other big groups go so we can meet new people, have a laugh,
Bernadette was saying.
Entertainment? I wondered if that would involve a band, and if so, might it be his band? A very early Christmas miracle?
Was this fate interceding once again? Before I could ask for details, Billy jumped in.
You just want to cop off with some drunk guy from Allied Carpets under the mistletoe, Billy said. There's no way I'm paying 60 quid a head for a dry roast turkey dinner and a cheesy afternoon disco, not just so as you can scout for talent.
Bernadette cackled and slapped him on the arm.
No, she said, it's not that. I just think it might be more fun if there's a bigger crowd there, that's all.
Janie looked slyly at the others, thinking that I hadn't seen her. I saw her eyes flick up to my scars, as they often did.
Let's ask Harry Potter over there, she said,
not quite sotto voce, and then turned to address me.
Eleanor? Hey, Eleanor, you're a bit of a girl about town, aren't you? What do you reckon? Where should we go for the office Christmas lunch this year?
I looked pointedly at the office wall calendar, which this month displayed a photograph of a green articulated lorry. It's the middle of summer, I said. I can't say I've really given it any thought.
Yeah, she said. But we've got to get something booked up now, otherwise all the good places get taken and you get left with, like, Wetherspoons or a rubbish Italian.
It's a matter of supreme indifference to me, I said. I shan't be going anyway. I rubbed at the cracked skin between my fingers. It was healing, but the process was painfully slow.
Oh, that's right, she said. You never go, do you? I've forgotten about that. You don't do the Secret Santa either. Eleanor the Grinch, that's what we ought to call you.
They all laughed. I don't understand that cultural reference, I said. However, to clarify, I'm an atheist and I'm not consumer-oriented, so the Midwinter Shopping Festival, otherwise known as Christmas, is of little interest to me. I went back to my work, hoping it would inspire them to do the same. They are like small children, easily distracted and content to spend what feels like hours discussing trivialities and gossiping about people they don't know.
Sounds like somebody had a bad experience in Santa's grotto back in the day, said Billy.
And then, thankfully, the phone rang. I smiled sadly. He couldn't even begin to imagine the sort of bad experiences I'd had back in the day. It was an internal call. Raymond, asking if I wanted to go and visit Sammy again with him tonight. A Wednesday. I'd miss my weekly chat with Mummy. I'd never missed one, not in all these years. But then what could she actually do about it after all? There couldn't be much harm in skipping it just this once, and Sammy was in need of nutritious food. I said yes. Our rendezvous was scheduled for 5:30. I'd insisted that we meet outside the post office, fearing the reaction of my co-workers were we to be observed leaving work together. It was a mild, pleasant evening, so we decided to walk to the hospital, which would take only 20 minutes. Raymond was certainly in need of the exercise.
How was your day, Eleanor?
He said, smoking as we walked. I changed sides, trying to position myself downwind of the noxious toxins. Fine, thank you. I had a cheese and pickle sandwich for lunch with ready salted crisps and a mango smoothie. He blew smoke out of the side of his mouth and laughed.
Anything else happen? Or just the sandwich?
I thought about this. There was a protracted discussion about Christmas lunch venues, I said. Apparently it's been narrowed down to TGI Fridays because it's a laugh. Here I tried out a little finger-waggling gesture indicating quotation marks, which I'd seen Janie doing once and had stored away for future reference. I think I carried it off with aplomb, or else the Bombay Bistro Christmas Buffet.
Nothing says Christmas like a lamb biryani, eh? Raymond said.
He stubbed out his cigarette, discarding it on the pavement. We arrived at the hospital and I waited while Raymond, typically disorganised, went into the shop on the ground floor. There really is no excuse for being unprepared. I had already gone to Marks and Spencer before meeting him and had purchased some choice items there, including a tub of pumpkin seeds. I suspected Sammy was in dire need of zinc. Raymond came out swinging a carrier bag. In the lift, he opened it and showed me what he'd bought.
Haribo, the Evening Times, big tub of sour cream and chive Pringles. What more could a man ask for, eh?
He said, looking quite proud of himself. I did not dignify this with a response. We paused at the ward entrance. Sammy's bed was surrounded by visitors. He saw us and beckoned us over. I looked around, but the stern nurse with the stripy socks was nowhere to be seen. Sammy was reclining regally on a mound of pillows, addressing the assembled throng.
Eleanor, Raymond, great to see ye. Come and meet the family. Well, this is Keith. The kiddies are at home with their mum. And this is Gary and Michelle. And this...
He indicated a blonde woman who was texting with impressive focus on her mobile telephone.
Is my daughter Laura.
I was aware of everyone smiling and nodding. And then they were shaking our hands, slapping Raymond's back. It was quite overwhelming. I'd put on my white cotton gloves rather than use the hand gel. I reasoned that I could run through a boil wash as soon as I got home. This occasioned a certain hesitancy in the handshakes, which was strange. Surely a cotton barrier between our respective skin surfaces could only be a good thing.
Thanks so much for taking care of my dad, guys,
the older brother, Keith, said, wiping his hands on the front of his trousers.
It means a lot to know he wasn't on his own when it happened, that he had people looking out for him.
Hey now, said Sammy, nudging him with his elbow. I'm not some doddery old invalid, you know. I can look after myself.
They smiled at one another.
Course you can, Dad. I'm just saying it's nice to have a friendly face around sometimes, eh?
Sammy shrugged, not conceding the point, but graciously allowing it to pass.
I've got some good news for you two,
Sammy said to us, leaning back contentedly into his pillows while Raymond and I deposited our carrier bags like myrrh and frankincense at the foot of his bed.
I'm getting out on Saturday.
Raymond high-fived him, after some initial awkwardness whereby Sammy had no idea why a podgy hand had been thrust in his face. He's coming to stay at mine for a couple of weeks, just till he gets confident with the walking frame, his daughter Laura said, finally looking up from her phone. We're having a wee party to celebrate. You're both invited, of course, she added, somewhat less than enthusiastically. She was staring at me. I didn't mind. In fact, I actually prefer that to surreptitious, sneaky glances. From her, I got a full and frank appraisal, filled with fascination, but with no trace of fear or disgust. I brushed my hair off my face so that she could get a better view. This Saturday, I said.
Now, Eleanor, don't you dare say you're busy,
Sammy said.
No excuses. I want you both there. End of.
Who are we to argue?
Raymond said, smiling. I thought about it. A party. The last party I'd been to, apart from that appalling wedding reception, was on Judy Jackson's 13th birthday. It had involved ice skating and milkshakes and hadn't ended well. Surely no one was likely to vomit or lose a finger at an elderly invalid's welcome home celebration. I shall attend, I said, inclining my head. Here's my card, Laura said, passing one each to Raymond and to me. It was black and glossy, embossed with gold leaf, and said, Laura Marston Smith, aesthetic technician, hairstylist, image consultant, with her contact details set out below.
7 o'clock on Saturday, yeah? Don't bring anything, just yourselves.
I tucked the card carefully into my purse. Raymond had thrust his into his back pocket. He couldn't take his eyes off Laura, I noticed, apparently hypnotised rather in the manner of a mongoose before a snake. She was clearly aware of this. I suspected she was used to it, looking the way she did. Blonde hair and large breasts are so clichéd, so obvious. Men like Raymond, pedestrian dullards, would always be distracted by women who looked like her, having neither the wit nor the sophistication to see beyond mammaries and peroxide. Raymond tore his eyes away from Laura's decolletage and looked at the wall clock, then, pointedly, at me. We shall depart.